Greetings and good evening, everyone, and welcome back to the Mark Fraley Podcast. Today is Thursday, April 4th, 2019. Spring is beginning to actually happen here in Nashville. Although we've had an overcast day today, the temperature will get up at around 70 degrees. The azaleas and red buds are beginning to bloom. As a lawyer over the last 20 years, helping people through the disability process, one of the constants I observed was the continuing struggle for the average citizen to obtain affordable quality health care services. And the subject tends to be in the news almost every day. Some years ago, my primary care physician decided to close his Nashville practice and move to Texas. I searched around for a little while seeking to find a medical provider that was the right fit for me. Fortunately, a young nurse practitioner opened a primary care and urgent care clinic just a few doors down the block from my law practice. This was our guest today, Jason Boylan. In this podcast, we often talk with people about their career choices and the life circumstances which influence those choices. The career which a person ends up pursuing is not often the result of some singular choice they made after graduating high school. It is often the result of educational and experiential exposure which make a career choice the natural next step, so to speak. Well, I've known Jason for 10 years or more. I've never really had the opportunity to discuss with him how he came to his career. And so you will be learning along with me about the fascinating path which he has taken. You will also learn a little bit about the challenges of starting a small business in the healthcare field. And so I hope you will enjoy my interview today with nurse practitioner Jason Boylan. Jason Boylan, welcome to the Mark Fraley Podcast.
Thank you, sir. I'm glad to be here.
Well, it's great that you're here at the house. It's fun to have that connection with you out here.
Yeah, it's a beautiful house.
Thank you. Jason, I guess we need to start with disclosing to everyone that you and I have a relationship, that you're my primary care healthcare provider. And I guess people ought to just know that before we get started, that I just didn't pick you off the out of the phone book to call. And I guess you and I have known each other for 10 years or more. Yep. I think, you know, when you opened, 10 years. You opened your practice, Third and Church Healthcare.
That's right.
Right in around 2009. Is that about right?
2009. Okay. This is 10 years.
All right. And I think I was one of your first customers.
Yeah, right across the street.
Right. And yeah, I was right. My law office was like two doors down from you.
Right.
So I've enjoyed getting to know you over the years and have a lot of faith in you. So thank you for coming.
Likewise. And you're welcome.
Jason, one of the things we talk about a lot in this podcast is people and their careers and how they choose to get into the life career that they choose. And I want to start with that with you. Where did you grow up and what were the influences that made you choose your career?
I grew up in Ann Arbor, Michigan. As a university city, you know, I had a lot of, I was around a lot of higher education. My dad was a professor and then dean of music at Michigan for a long time. And my mom is really the, you know, she ran a concert house there and still does. She just is semi-retired now. And I grew up there, and I wouldn't say I was the greatest student. It was easy to get lost in a city like that. From there, it was a good base for being lucky, I suppose. I feel when I look back on where I grew up in that kind of a city, and it was just kind of cool to be there in the 70s and 80s. Of course, I took it for granted, but being around a lot of thinkers and entrepreneurs and academics that really value, you know, academics, right, for lack of a better word.
Right.
So I think kind of moving higher education into my life it was almost sewed into my DNA from where I grew up.
Okay.
And
so where did you go to undergraduate school?
Okay, so high school, I was not a great student.
Right, right.
But I took a year at a community college there, and I always tell people, like, this year it was Washtenaw Community College. Actually, that year was one of the best years of education I had. You know, there were a lot of retired professors and really gave, a lot to their curriculum, and it really sparked my interest in reading and literature and philosophy, and all kinds of different things that I never even considered. And so I always wanted to kind of address that, because I think, you know, people think that, you know, maybe community college is subpar or something like that, and maybe not, but ultimately I look at that so fondly that I really have to plug that in. From that year, I was able to do really well in that program, and then I went on to go to Western Michigan University.
Okay.
In Kalamazoo.
Okay.
It was a 4-year school, so I took an extra 5. And actually, my major was in psychology.
Okay.
And a minor in philosophy.
Okay.
So the ground was, you know, was set for my future in a way, in that how I approach my patients now, a lot of it was established in that kind of curriculum of kind of understanding human behavior, from psychologically speaking as well.
Fantastic. And do I understand then that you came to study at Vanderbilt?
Right, but there's a bridge between.
Okay,
there.
All right, all right.
So after that, I worked for a little while in a town called Ypsilanti, which is outside of Ann Arbor, in mental health, working with dually diagnosed, meaning having a major mental illness and also a major substance abuse problem. And it was a grant program, and most of them were homeless. Very challenging work. This was about 2 years of my life, young 20s. Really challenging, and I had great mentors, gratefully. Again, that kind of sparked my interest, and I actually went on to get a master's degree in counseling.
Okay.
And that was at West Virginia University.
All right.
In the mid 90s, so 96 to 98. So I received my master's in counseling from West Virginia University in 98 and took a position in Nashville that same year as a counselor. So
where were you in 98? Where were you set up as a counselor?
Okay, so when I first moved here, I worked for a company that's still here. It's a nonprofit. It's called Youth Villages.
Okay, I'm familiar with that, because we would see them juvenile court from time to time.
Right.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
They were relative. They weren't necessarily small, but much smaller than they are now. We started. There was a program called Intercept, which what I would do would go into the homes of the families that were struggling to keep their kids out of trouble, or just were in and out of the system, so to speak. And my job is to go in there, identify some strategic ways to engage the community and to help them build up some skills to help to keep that child in the home instead of being put through into the system. Very challenging work, again.
Into the system, meaning state custody.
Correct.
Right.
Whether
right.
in a home, a group home, or into a foster home or something that's not the nuclear family,
right?
Or whatever that family looks like.
Gotcha.
So got to know Nashville, and it was a good job. I mean, a learning experience, and shockingly low in earnings.
Of course.
But I, you know, I've always been pretty thrifty, made it happen, made it work, really enjoyed that work. Then I went on to work at Centerstone, which is also another nonprofit local mental health facility, doing more outpatient work, similar work with similar families.
Right.
But I came to a crossroads at that point as to what came next in my career. Kind of rewinding the tape a little bit, when I went in to get my master's in counseling, I always knew somewhere deep down that I would want to do a private practice at some level. And I don't really know why, and it wasn't necessarily like the shiny coins that, you know, people think are associated with that. My mom was very entrepreneurial, and my grandfather, you know, he owned several businesses, mm-hmm. and I think that just maybe was sewn into my DNA, and I kind of knew I was going to be my own boss, and so I had to figure out what's going to be the best profession for me to hang a shingle on, because there was multiple options to do, either continue to work towards licensure as a counselor, to go on to get a PhD in psychology, but it, you know, I've always believed in asking questions and going to people who are in similar positions, and asking those questions about career opportunities and what's the growth in that market and like what are the trends, right? So it's a long way to get to how I became a nurse practitioner,
right.
But at the end of the day, there was a MSW, a social worker, that worked in the practice with me at Centerstone, and she went to Vanderbilt to add the psychiatric nurse practitioner to her practice.
Right.
And so I didn't even know something like that existed, right? So, there was another PhD psychologist in the program that I talked to, and multiple people in that vein. And when the real, you know, it came down to like, and I'll quote, you know, this psychologist, and he said, because I was like, I'm really debating whether to move towards a PhD or getting my master's in nursing and becoming a nurse practitioner. And he got kind of an earnest look on his face and basically said, well, do you want to be part of a shrinking field or a growing field?
Boy, that's insightful, isn't it?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Coming from him, right?
Yeah.
I mean, who is in it.
Right.
So, yeah, so I, and correct me, please slow me down because I'm speaking too much.
No, you're, go for it.
So I had applied to multiple PhD psychology programs, and then I'd also applied to Vanderbilt locally for their master's in nursing. And I, you know, I was just going to see where the chips fell. I did get accepted to a PhD program and then ultimately got accepted to Vanderbilt's program. And so I had to make that choice. And of course I did go ahead and choose the master's in nursing, and started towards that career.
So with no previous background in psychological training, but no previous background in medical type of nursing, you just jump right into a master's program?
Well, so on the weekends and evenings and whenever I could squeeze it in, I was doing my anatomy and physiology,
gotcha.
Prerequisites, microbiology, nutrition. There was a lot of prerequisites before even entering the program.
Okay.
Now, Vanderbilt had a non-traditional way of going from A to B called a bridge program.
All right.
The bridge program allows people to come in with no nursing experience, gain it through the program, and then move into the master's program from there.
So you get your RN at some point along the line,
mm-hmm.
then your master's degree up.
Right. Or you can stop and then practice as an RN and then continue later.
Right.
But ultimately, they really encourage you to move through it in one fell swoop. and I can get to that in a little bit. The program itself, there were some challenges, but the initially I chose, there's different tracks for nurse practitioners, different subspecialties. There's pediatrics, there's acute care, family, psychiatric. And I, you know, just kind of naturally said, okay, well, I'm going to do the psychiatric thing because that's what I've been doing.
Right.
And I realized that, you know, as I was in it, I was like, well, I really like this portion of it. I really like the whole being. And I don't want to restrict myself in practice. And family nurse practitioners can do just about everything the psychiatric nurse practitioner can do, except much more. And so gratefully, I was able to switch into the specialty of FNP, or family nurse practitioner.
Okay.
And, you know, take it from there.
That's just fantastic. What a long ride that has been, huh, to get into that.
Yeah. So, you know... you know, I think maybe my generation, maybe I, and I don't like to speak to generations, but it's, I used to hear people say, you know, you're going to have so many careers through your lifetime. Whereas, you know, my dad started at Michigan and graduated, or retired at Michigan.
Right.
That was more of his generation and before people in, and I was like, well, you know, thinking I had a career path, but then that changed. So yeah, I mean, it kind of was a long trip, and I when I think about it, I'm like, well, I didn't even start school to be a nurse practitioner until my 30s.
Right.
And, you know, so, and I treat a lot of people 20s, 30s and up, of course. And, the 20s, and I've said this to a lot of, that the 20s seem to be the hardest decade for people.
Okay.
And I think that, you know, and I, because I'm looking back at it, you know, the stresses of what you think you're going to do for a career, what you think you want for a family. And now I can just tell them it's going to be okay.
Fantastic. So you did your work at Vanderbilt, got your certification as a family nurse practitioner, and what did you do then? What was your venture out in your first gig, so to speak, in with that credential?
Yes, sir. So back then, and that's changed since, we were able to get a certificate of fitness to practice right out of school.
Okay.
So the day I graduated, my first son was born. I studied for my boards, hadn't started a new job, all within like 3 weeks.
Oh, gee.
And we moved into a new house. But anyway, I like to do it all at once.
Man.
So I took a job with Wes Wilson. I'm sorry. It's been so long. With a family practice in Lebanon with several internal medicine physicians, a general surgeon, and it had a walk-in clinic attached to it.
Okay.
And I worked with them for several years. Concurrently, during those years, I took on a part-time job at the local emergency room there, what was then UMC.
Okay. McFarland Hospital?
It was actually after McFarland.
Okay, okay.
University Medical Center.
Right.
There, right on. In Lebanon, so
I used to know some of the pulmonary therapy people out there, which is another old program. So, but all this time, you were harboring the notion that you wanted to be your own boss and have your own business and such as that.
Yes, sir. I also knew that to be able to do that effectively, I would need several years of some good experience.
Sure enough.
And I've been extremely lucky to have such great mentors and leaders in my life that have been able to shepherd me and teach me and be open for questions. So yes, I did know that in my mind, but it wasn't until, you know, maybe six or so years into my practice that I actually made that a reality.
So what was involved in making that a reality?
So blending experience with in internal medicine, pediatrics, emergency medicine. I did some stints with orthopedics. I really wanted to polish my skill set for what I wanted to deliver. Because in medicine, there's so many subspecialties. I mean, there's neonatal nurse practitioners that just focus on that. I mean, it's very subspecialized. I always knew I wanted to do a general practice, per se, master of none, jack of all trades, pretty much. But, you know, but I needed to be really polished to be able to do that effectively and safely. So there was a lot of long nights and weekends and holidays at the emergency department, which is, you know, working with great physician groups and, you know, just a good place to figure it out, that's for sure.
I'll tell you what, the emergency room is a place to go and see it all.
It's certainly all there.
Yeah.
That's right.
It's the sort of the, in the law field, the night court would be the place to go.
Right. I could see that. I don't want to see that.
But. No, it's not pretty. But you know, Jason, you certainly have such a wide experience that you've been exposed to in treatment modalities. But setting up a business, particularly in the medical field, there's a lot to know about. You know, where you can have an office, how do you hire staff, how do you bill insurance companies. I mean, there's a lot of mechanics involved in opening a practice in the medical field.
Correct. You know, it's highly regulated and there's a lot of pitfalls and a lot of potentials for missteps. I honestly bought a book called How to Start a Business in Medical Practice.
Okay.
And I really dug into that, highlighted it, marked it, did all the things. And that was a start. I had a mentor that had started a practice as well, and went to him and talked to them a little bit. But I can't honestly really remember how I got into my first place. It was Music Valley. The name of my actual company is Music Valley Medical.
Okay.
I do business as Third and Church Healthcare.
Right.
Music Valley, as you probably know, is right near Opryland.
Right.
And there was a, there is still a massage school there that had an empty space next to it that somehow I came across. And I just said, okay, I want to start a practice, and this is a space that I think would be okay. You know, I had Gaylord across the way. I figured I could try to pick up some patients there. And the overhead was extremely low. Like, they just wanted me to take it, basically.
Right.
So I started there, hired a receptionist, and I think I had two exam rooms. And I just, you know, started seeing people on the low, like low overhead. I wish I could still say the same now on my overhead, but man, it was cheap. Like back then, Nashville's grown and it's much more expensive, but, that was where I started. and that was for, that was 2007. When I first opened doors.
Okay.
I can get into how I landed downtown.
Yeah, I'd love to hear about that. Now, you know, 2009 in downtown Nashville was not the vibrant place that it is today.
No, sir.
And I remember well the building that you are in now and have been in for the last 10 years was vacant for a long, long time. And was rehabilitated
Village Real Estate.
By Village Real Estate. Mark Deutschman and his company did that building, and I remember all that happening. But it's sat vacant for a good long time. Yes. Actually, I think Mark had his office in there for a while,
right,
or a division of his office.
That's correct.
Right. So how did you wind up in that space?
Well, luck, really, honestly. I at the time I lived in Germantown, and my neighbor was, I don't know that he still owns it, Core Development. His name is Aaron White, and we were friends and neighbors, and his office was in Third and Church. And I always saw the need for some kind of urgent or some kind of practice around Nashville, just around downtown, because there was none.
Right.
And I lived there, and I was like, man, nobody has a practice here. And I was walking, just hanging out with him and our kids, and I was like, you know, I just need a place near downtown to start. And he's like, well, we're moving out of Third and Church.
Oh, fantastic.
Mark is downsizing and wanting to move over to right near here in Hillsboro. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, well, can we set up a meeting? Next thing you know, there we are. And this was post-recession, so this is, post-2008.
That's right.
So the rental rates were good. Were good enough. And, we just signed a 5-year lease with a 5-year renewal, kind of went from there. I shared the space for a little while with a chiropractor, a really good man named Dr. Rob Mabry. He went on to move to Memphis, and I took over the whole space, and since then have some of it out because it's too big for my needs.
Yeah, you've got a physical therapy outfit in there at this presently.
Correct.
Yeah.
Results Physical Therapy.
Okay.
They have a space in the back.
Right.
I also rent out a room to a massage therapist.
Okay.
So, knowing my roots.
So who are your clientele? Are they people that live downtown? Are they tourists that come through town? Or
yes, all of the
all
above.
Of that.
So I would say in order, people that work downtown, people that travel, and then people that live, although the people that live are starting to maybe usurp the travelers as far as numbers go.
Okay.
Because when I started down there, the Viridian was just kind of getting off the ground. The Cumberland was a place where people lived. There wasn't not a lot of population of people that lived down there.
Right.
Which has changed.
Right.
And there was a lot of forecasting, and I was, excited about it. Of course, I don't think anyone could have forecasted this, but I'm harvesting a lot more new patients that are moving downtown and finding me.
And these are people that are, obviously it's a mix of things, but people seeing you on a one-time basis or trying to establish an ongoing relationship with you.
So a lot of one-offers, but that's more of an indicator of my practice being mostly urgent care. I do, as you know, a pretty small practice of primary, for those who've been with me long enough. And it's not a huge part of my practice. And primary care relies on a lot of repeat customers in scheduling. And I have always kind of worked on a first come, first served basis. Mm-hmm. So it really it doesn't fit the model to do primary care, but I do some.
Mm-hmm. And and people just come without an appointment to your office, which is what I love about your place, because I really very rarely have to wait for service.
That's the goal.
Yeah.
I threw a slogan up there, tagline, quality, convenient, peace of mind on your time a long time ago. And I meant it. I mean, I know that people, they live busy lives downtown. I mean, there are a lot of professionals that need to get back to their law practice or architectural firm or restaurant, and they don't have time to sit in my lobby. Let alone being not well or injured.
One of the things I remember about you is that you did house calls at one point in your
I did.
Career. Not doing that so much anymore.
I may clip one off from time to time. I did actually start doing house calls before I opened my doors in Music Valley.
Okay.
I have a lot of relationships with the hotels, like the Hermitage.
Oh, I got it.
Built those relationships even before I had doors open, which was nice.
Yes.
I've had a lot of champions. Like, I mean, the Hermitage has been very good to me. And just other, you know, other places downtown that I had built relationships through house calls. Frankly, I really enjoy the house call. It's logistically just very difficult to run
sure.
a practice and also do this.
Sure. Oh, yeah. As a child, my uncle was a pediatrician, and I would occasionally get a chance to go out with him in an afternoon, and it seemed like a lot of time for very, very little service.
Right.
Yeah. Because driving around town and then spending 10 minutes in somebody's house and then driving another 20 minutes to the next place.
Correct.
Yeah. So you were kind of a pioneer in the independent practice of a nurse practitioner. Is that safe to say?
I don't like to use maybe pioneer, but I mean, there wasn't as many then as there is now,
okay.
I suppose.
Okay.
There was only a few that I knew of that I could kind of try to draw off their information. And, you know, it was a small community of privately owned nurse practitioner businesses.
And so in the grand scheme of things, you know, we read in the papers that there's a coming scarcity of doctors. I read this morning an article about the scarcity of nurses. People are going to need health care, obviously, and someone has to provide it. So talk to me about that. What do you see as the issues with scarcity of providers?
Well, that's a big question,
yeah.
And there's a lot of layers to that. I'll unpack what I can speak to just from my own personal experience. So what I do know is that, like a family physician, if you're picking a residency in med school, family physician or family practice doctors are becoming like extinct. So like there's not a lot of programs that even offer it. So it's internal medicine, pediatrics, you know, orthopedists, and dermatologists. And so a lot of it's becoming just subspecialties. And so like a true family practice or primary care, that deficit of providers is being filled by a lot of mid-level, as they're sometimes referred to, providers such as nurse practitioners or physician assistants. There's a lot of with the government programs like Medicare, Medicaid. There's a lot of physician practices that are opting out of it. For whatever reasons, there's reasons, but the people that have those kind of insurances don't always have a place to go, and so you know those type practices are often filled by nurse practitioners who can credential with those type of payers and get paid for their services.
Right, right, and of course if you're there's a significant portion of our population that is without insurance.
Correct.
And you're equipped to deal with people on a cash basis if they need to be.
I've always tried to keep my cash rates as low as I can without being a poor businessman. But ultimately, you know, a lot of fee-for-service pricing that I've seen around town is quite prohibitive. And I like to keep it pretty reasonable and attainable because, to be honest, we're talking about deficits where people may not be able to seek care or are afraid to seek care or they're worried about the cost. Really, like one of the huge demographics of my practice is is young entrepreneurs or people that, you know, work for themselves that don't even have insurance or highly underinsured, that just, you know, they need to engage. But because of our healthcare system, I don't think anybody's going to argue, has a lot of flaws. And one of them is trying to help that middle demographic and, you know, middle income, I guess, for lack of a better word, where you may not benefit from some of the subsidies from the Affordable Care Act by making just a bit too much money, or, you know, just being below the poverty line. Or there's a lot of factors that go into that. You know, and I think just the changing of administrations and all, and the confusion around healthcare is only making it worse. I frankly supported the ACA, though it had a lot of flaws. I feel like if it could have just been worked out a little bit better, instead of, you know, crashing it to the ground.
Right. I think even the proponents of it would accept that there were things that needed to be fixed after the first 18 months.
Sure.
And but the opposing political forces wouldn't permit repair. They were bought into the whole thing of failing the system. So.
Yeah, and you know, I'm not a political scientist, but I feel like you know, I was also, you know, grateful to a degree to be able to shop around for insurance policies, which is really hard to do for a self-employed person. You know, in the early days of the ACA, it was actually pretty reasonable that what I was able to find in my bracket, but it, you know, through the years, the premiums just started shooting up, and the deductibles shooted up, and I think a lot of that, and again, this is not based on any scientific facts that I know of, but like, is, you know, healthier people were opting out and taking the penalty. And so when you have a mix of unhealthy folk that, you know, consume a lot of healthcare, and that was what the mandate was all about, was trying to make sure that everybody was in.
Everybody had to be in the pool.
Yeah, exactly. But the pool got, you know, a little murky. And so insurance companies that are for profit do what you think they're going to do, and they're going to adjust accordingly to make more money.
Right.
And meet their quotas.
So, Jason, what is a typical day for you?
These days, I'm about 50% practice, 50% administration.
All right.
I see patients probably 20 hours a week, gratefully. I walk into each exam encounter telling myself that, you know, this is a good thing. And like, I don't have to really convince myself. I really, truly enjoy the patient encounter. I've been able to, through the years, just do something that has truly given me happiness as a profession. And so whether it's just joking around with my patients, or, you know, making a kid smile, or, you know, and obviously helping to take them through the process of what's going on.
Right.
Most of what is mine is like taking care of an urgent problem effectively and efficiently. That makes me happy. And, you know, and when I'm teaching, and I do a lot of teaching, I take a lot of students, you know, I teach them that hurting people hurt, and, you know, just because people are upset at you and doesn't mean that, you know, you take it personally. So you have to learn to have thick skin in this profession, and also understanding where people are coming from. And I've found that even the most quote, hostile patients. With a little bit of listening and some guided, you know, insight, before you know it, you're understanding that there's really an emotional pain below what's going on physically. And that is kind of where the evolution of my practice goes way back, is that the mind, body, spirit, of approaching the human is really the most effective manner. Because ultimately, you know, when I say hurting people hurt, I really mean, like, you know, what is the emotional trigger for this physical ailment? And of course, that's not always the case, but I find that a good portion of the case is people are overworked, they're overwhelmed, they're overstimulated, you know, and you know, that takes its toll. So back pain, headaches, you know, those type of things, they oftentimes just come from a cumulative stress response. And being able to identify that is crucial. And I always teach this to my students, is getting to the why. Why is this person having this and this particular problem? Now, if they have a runny nose and itchy eyes and sneezing, the why is because of the pollen right now.
Right.
But that's an easy one.
Right.
But, you know, getting to the why of some more complex problems is not always done through sticking a needle in their arm, drawing blood out, and sending it to the lab.
Fantastic.
A lot of times I'll tell the patient, I said, okay, I understand your concerns. We're going to do these tests. And when they're normal, we need to talk about what's next for you. Because what's next for you is going to be, how are we going to change your day-to-day so that this cumulative stress does not emote itself in this physical manner. People do get taken aback by that approach, but at the end of the day, they're not used to it, but I think they really appreciate it.
I'm certain that that's true. One of the things that it occurred to me to ask you was, do you continue to practice in the strictly mental health category? But you're giving me a different angle on that. You're handling the traditional healthcare, but trying to look behind the picture.
Yeah, behind the curtain there's a lot of years of emotional stress. I do some traditional psychiatric work.
Okay.
So I do treat anxiety, depression.
Right.
You know, some of the local therapists have had good experience with me, so they want to send folks my way to help manage. A lot of that has, you know, I mean, I've been on their side of the couch, so to speak.
Right.
And I do understand it and value that. And so I do some of that work. But again, sometimes someone's coming in for one problem, ask a couple good leading questions, and you can really figure out what's really wrong and be a change agent to try to help direct them correctly. Because people, you know, they don't always understand what's going on with them. And it's also, you know, very difficult task, because ultimately you don't want to unpack too much at once and, you know, make sure that they're, you know, and then send them out after a 10-15 minute visit.
Right.
So
overwhelm them with
you
that.
You have to have really some skilled soft gloves to figure it out, and that takes time.
Fantastic.
And that's again why I wanted to have the medical foundation before starting my own practice, so that I could integrate, you know, all the skill sets that I have comfortably, so that when I look at a chart before I walk in the room, 9 times out of 10 I know exactly what I'm doing before I even talk to the patient. And then there's that space between that I want to make it effective and efficient for them. If that makes sense.
It absolutely does. Jason, what does the future look like for you and your Third and Church Healthcare?
Well, right now I signed another 5-year lease, so
that's good
we'll
news.
We'll be there in the corner for a little while. I've done a little bit of stretching my arms some. I rolled out a telemed platform, which truly I think is going to be part of the future of medicine. It already is.
Tell me what that is.
So, you know, I found the correct HIPAA compliant, as a lawyer, you'll appreciate that, application for kind of a direct discussion between me and my patients through either text, phone, or video chat.
And the concern is privacy. Privacy, and making sure that privacy is maintained.
Right. Yeah, so it's right. only an application that you can invite them to. It's not something you go to an Apple store and get.
Gotcha.
And so there's a connection between the practice and the patient. And the patient may, you know, maybe needs something that's sub-urgent. And that's a fee-for-service business. But the fee is $50. And I think somebody's, you know, sitting at home and doesn't want to get up and sit in the lobby and just has something sub-urgent that needs to be taken care of is willing to pay that money. And that a lot of that speaks to, you know, adding fee-for-service, you know, services is kind of crucial for the existence of a practice now. Because really what, you know, with rising costs, especially in the city, rising rent, rising human resources, none of the payers are increasing my reimbursements. As a matter of fact, they're going down. So there's an inverse relationship with overhead, which, like I said, used to be great, but isn't now, and income. So I realized that, like, there's a cap where my business just kind of sits, even at kind of full capacity. And to break through that ceiling, I have to add certain cash services. And so I'm doing that. I've brought on somebody to do some kind of soft aesthetic practice, you know, out. It's separate from mine, pretty much, even though it's under my umbrella, because I like to do what I like to do.
So more more dermatology type stuff?
Yeah, some derm stuff, and ultimately, you know, she'll help to run some of the telemed programs and some of those services, and I can continue to do what I am passionate about. Because I always feel like people need to do what they're passionate about. I'm not passionate about aesthetics, and she is.
Okay, so all right.
But I also, I'm passionate about staying in business and paying for my kids' college.
Well, I think your priorities are right where they need to be, certainly.
Yes.
Jason, it's been really a thrill to have you here as a guest.
Thank you.
I appreciate so much you taking your time to be here with us. And thanks for coming in.
I appreciate it. All right. Thanks for hearing me out. All right.